Hej och välkomna till avsnitt 1198 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser, Sveriges enda konservativa USA-podd med mig, Ronny Berggren. Min kollega John Gustafsson stöder inte Donald Trump och har sedan första början hängt med i den republikanska Never Trump-rörelsen. Här följer en intervju som John har gjort med Rick Wilson, en av grundarna bakom The Lincoln Project, som på kort tid blivit kända för sin hårda, konservativt baserade Trump-kritik. Varmt välkomna. John Gustafsson, hej.
Hej.
Vi ska spela en intervju som du har gjort med Rick Wilson som är en av grundarna bakom The Lincoln Project. Kan du berätta lite kort bara, vad är The Lincoln Project?
The Lincoln Project är en sammanslutning, en organisation som grundades av bland Rick Wilson och andra republikanska strateger, operatives som man brukar kalla dem. Folk som har, som i Rick Wilsons fall, han jobbade redan på Bush den äldres tid för hans kampanj. Han jobbade för Rudy Giuliani på 90-talet. Det är en sammanslutning, så att säga, politiska veteraner inom republikaner som är emot Donald Trump, och som man kan säga att de tar ut svängarna väldigt mycket. De är mest kända för att de producerar tv-reklam, alltså ads, där man ads som helt enkelt går ut på att provocera Donald Trump maximalt. Mm. Och det har lyckats ganska många gånger. Han har flera gånger fått utbrott mot Lincoln Project på Twitter för att, jo, det är en grej vi ska nämna också. Många av Lincoln Projects ads, och jag rekommenderar att ni går in på YouTube och söker på Lincoln Project, alltså Lincoln som är Abraham Lincoln, presidenten, Lincoln-projektet på YouTube. Där kan ni se dem, och de märkte också att väldigt många av de här adsen, de flesta i politiken, så brukar man rikta sig till väljarna, medans Lincoln Project riktar sig direkt till Trump, och man försöker ofta spela på hans paranoida drag, så att han, som en av de mest berömda, det är det här Whispers ad, det tycker jag ni ska söka på YouTube, som är helt enkelt få Donald Trump att förstå att han kan inte lita på någon, om man säger så. Det som man brukar säga, att de riktar sig till en publik på en person. Det är direkt psykologisk krigsföring mot Donald Trump.
Mm, okej. Okay. Ja, men vi ska lyssna på den här intervjun, och den kan bli intressant då, därför att du är konservativ, John, men du stöder inte Donald Trump, och det här är en del av den rörelsen som också betecknar sig som konservativa, men som inte stöder Donald Trump. Och vi spelar intervjun, så kan vi prata lite mer lite kort efter intervjun. Så att här kör vi intervjun.
Okay, Rick Wilson, thank you so much for being with us today. First of all, I watched the debate, and I just want to issue my condolences on the state of your country. I think that's appropriate to do first. So you have made me feel better about my country, you know, if that makes you feel any better. I thought we had it bad.
So, yeah, no, you don't.
Yeah,
we're a special case right now.
Yeah, you sure are. That's it's a new take on American exceptionalism you got going on there.
Yes, this is not the exceptionalism I had hoped for.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself and the Lincoln Project, and how did the Lincoln Project, which is a Republican coalition against Trump, that's been running some rather samey ads recently. How did it all come about? How did it start?
Well, the Lincoln Project was formed by a group of us who, for a long time, were considering what we were going to do to respond to Trumpism in the 2020 election cycle. And all of us were experienced national political campaign strategists who had been at every level, from the presidency to U.S. Senate to governors to Congress, for many, many years. We all had a deep bench of experience in various areas, whether strategy or media or polling or politics. And so we recognized we had a moral obligation. If we were going to do this, we couldn't just talk about being Never Trump. We had to take action. So we set out with a goal to raise about $5 million and to try to play a role in one or two states. Well, the group grew a lot faster than we anticipated, and we are on track right now to raise about $70 million this year, which make us 7-0, yes. Wow. We've been very effective. We're campaigning right now in approximately 10 swing states. in both the presidential race and in U.S. Senate races. We have built out a following on social media that's larger than the Republican Party. We have built out a national infrastructure for folks to do grassroots politics in many of the swing states that we're focused on. We've got over 25,000 volunteers. We have over 500,000 donors who have given on an average about $52 to support the cause. And we are in a position right now, we think, to be a vital voice in the coming last month of this campaign to defeat Donald Trump and Trumpism and its enablers.
That's well, I certainly hope you're right about that. So I heard today, or if it was yesterday, that the Biden campaign is pulling all its negative ads, all its attack ads against Trump in light of him being diagnosed with COVID-19. What's the Lincoln Project strategy here? Is it business as usual?
Well, our strategy is going to continue to prosecute this case against Donald Trump. The Trump campaign is still pushing forward every day. They are still aggressively running negative ads against Joe Biden. They are still out there on their earned media attacking Biden, the Biden family, and Senator Harris. So we're not going to take our foot off the gas. And let's be honest, Donald Trump brought this problem on himself. Donald Trump took this disease lightly. He treated it with contempt. He thought it would never get to him, and it got to him. You know, there's an arc in everyone's life where you have expectations, choices, and consequences. Well, the consequences Donald Trump is facing right now are because he exposed himself recklessly to COVID over and over and over and over again. Here we are. So we're not going to stop our campaign. They're not stopping their campaign. There's no chance we're going to take our foot off the gas.
Yeah, I didn't think so either, but I have to check. So, for those listeners who may not be aware of this, most of the cases in recent days have been linked to the Rose Garden event where Trump officially nominated Amy Coney Barrett. Basically none of the attendees wore masks, and now this event is being compared. I don't know if you're Game of Thrones fans, but this is being compared to the Red Wedding. You know,
it's the Red Wedding.
Yeah. Though I would say it's more like the Purple Wedding, because Trump is often compared to Joffrey. So I think that's a better metaphor.
Indeed.
So you've written two books. The first one was titled Everything Trump Touches Dies, which I think is a great title. And I have ordered it, but it hasn't arrived yet. My plan was actually to read it before I talk to you, but that didn't happen. I'm blaming Amazon. So what do you mean by everything? What has Trump touched that has died?
Well, the Republican Party, the rule of law, the Constitution, the budget, the nation's international standing, everyone who goes to work for Donald Trump eventually is destroyed or humiliated, everyone. And he is a destructive force in American political and life that has been never before seen in our history. This is the worst president of all time, without a question. It's not an exaggeration. It's not a rhetorical trope. This is the worst president this country has ever faced. We're going to be lucky to survive him, much less get past him. So our ideal, when I wrote Everything Trump Touches Dies, was initially about the damage he does to individuals who come to serve him and the way that his behavior hurts the country and its institutions. And when I wrote that book, I didn't write it as something that would predict the deaths of 200,000 Americans. I wrote it because I was a student of Trump, an anthropologist of this terrible human being. Well, my predictions and my turn of phrase became an iron law of American politics. It is now immutable. No one survives contact with Trump with their honor, dignity, and reputation intact. Nothing he gets involved with survives as an institution, which is kind of a frightening prospect because, you know, as the president of the United States, he wields enormous power.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You also wrote a second book, which was released in January this year, Running Against the Devil, which was, I haven't read it, but as I understand it, it was advice on for Democrats on how to defeat Trump. So how well are they doing so far? Are they following the instructions?
Largely, not entirely. They're doing a good job. And they're raising more money than I had planned for, which is a really good thing. They've been able to put a lot more money into the campaign than I anticipated they would, and that is a power in campaigning that cannot be underestimated in American politics.
Okay, so they're doing decently well so far, at least.
The main rule in that was that they needed to keep this race as a referendum on Donald Trump. They've done a pretty good job of that so far, and I think they got that message pretty clearly. This race, if it's about Trump, Trump will lose. If it's about policy, Trump will win.
Yeah. I mean, it is worth noting that Donald Trump still has an advantage over Joe Biden on the economy when it comes to having the trust of the Americans. So,
he does.
So fortunately, you know, and I want to be very clear, I do not wish for Trump's death. But the fortunate part about him and other people close to him getting COVID is that it's much harder to get the conversation back on the economy. It's hard for them to get the conversation where they want it. You know, it's hard to direct a campaign from a hospital bed.
It is, and it's also a part of Trump's character that he's going to have a hard time sitting still. He's going to have a hard time not tweeting every 5 minutes. He's going to have a hard time not getting adulation and adoration at every moment of the day. So it's definitely going to be an impediment to his campaign moving forward the way they had hoped to.
You don't have corona, do you?
What's that?
You don't have corona, do you?
I tested negative yesterday.
Okay, that's good.
So the Lincoln Project, we're all at an undisclosed location, and we get tested for corona every 3 days.
That's great. It's kind of sad
we take it seriously. Believe me, I don't like having that thing shoved up my nose every 3 days, but it's important for us to stay safe.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that you can actually have better safety precautions than the White House, apparently. But, you know, I'm glad.
Oh, okay. We take it seriously, and he does not.
Yeah. So speaking of the Lincoln Project, so do you see the we have 1 month now left of the campaign, exactly. We're 1 month away from the election. So do you see the Lincoln Project being a long-term thing? Do you see it being a part in 2024 in the primaries?
Yes. Yeah. We plan to remain active in 2022 and 2024 for two reasons. One, our mission statement was to defeat Donald Trump, but also to defeat Trumpism and the enablers of Trumpism. The people who have brought us to this point, it's not just Donald Trump in the White House. There are many U.S. senators who understood Donald Trump was guilty in the Ukraine matter, is corrupt in many other matters, is a reckless and dangerous factor in this country's political life. And in every one of those cases, it is important that those people be held to account. So we'll be around.
Yeah. So because I know that you're not a registered Republican anymore. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So but you see yourself being a part then in the 2024 primaries to make sure that there isn't a Trumpist candidate nominated again.
That's correct.
Yeah. And I know this next question has been asked. It's been asked a lot, but I wanted to get your insight because we don't have. We have a lot of people in Sweden talking American politics, but we have very few of them actually from America or having worked in American politics. It's a lot of people who.
Sure.
Yeah. So I just want to get your view on this. What went wrong? I mean, if you could name some key points when the GOP took a wrong turn that, you know, that. Inevitably,
sure. It's a very simple answer.
Yeah.
Fox News became the most powerful normative force in American political life for the Republicans. And Fox News is not a conservative network. It is an entertainment network that happens to have conservatives on it. And they became more and more dedicated to the sort of transgressive, loudmouth, you know, smack talking version of conservatism and owning the libs and wars on imaginary wars on Christmas and racially motivated things, you know, that became wired into their DNA. And so because of that, the Republican Party transformed from a party that was once about ideas and ideals, the rule of law, the Constitution, personal integrity, values, moral probity, all those things disappeared. Now it is about worshiping Trump and owning the libs. So Fox and Facebook were the two most significant factors in the collapse of the Republican Party as we once knew it.
That's actually interesting. I'm not sure if you know this, but the personality cult that he has amassed, he actually has quite a few followers in Sweden as well. I wrote an article about that. I have drawn their ire at a number of times, including on this podcast. And I find it fascinating because what I like to say is that they think of, and this was a eureka moment I had when I was watching a hockey game the other day, actually, and I was thinking, they think of politics as a team sport. You know, we're cheering on our team, and if our team is, you know, if one of our players tackles someone to the head, then we cheer him on. If one of the other team's players even touches one of our guys, then we're going to, you know, scream for the referee, you know, because it's our team, you know.
Right.
I also think, as you were saying, you know, about Fox News being entertainment, that there is a certain segment now, a rather large segment, that expect to be entertained from politics. And
yes.
Rather than having politics as a civic duty, you know.
It has become a sport, an entertainment event, a reality TV show.
Yeah. So that's something that I'm slowly seeing becoming a part in Sweden as well, but to a lesser extent than America, because it used to be the case that, you know, party leader debates were rather boring. They were rather boring affairs, and even, you know, presidential debates in the U.S. were rather boring. But now, you know, you have the scorecards, you have the bingo cards, you have, you know, you have the whole, like, sort of. I mean, I saw a poll of 30% who watched the debate watched it only for entertainment. They had already made up their minds. They just wanted the bread and circuses, so to speak. I guess this sort of leads into my next question. So what should other conservative movements, if you were not in the U.S., if you were in any other country and you were active in a conservative party or a conservative movement, how do you avoid that fate, so to speak?
The biggest problem with it is that the current social media climate, basically, a lot of elections are now mediated through Facebook, essentially, and those things don't reward ideas as much as they reward individuals and personalities. But when you have a party that's wrapped around a personality, not only does that party reflect both the good and the bad of that person, but it fails to have an underpinning of ideological substance that lets people join it without having to, you know, have a personal contact of some kind with the dear leader or to feel some personal connection to that person. The reason Donald Trump is so powerful in part is because he had a reality TV show for 14 years and people believed what they saw on the show. The real Donald Trump is a total train wreck. But I do think if you're in a center-right party in Europe, the idea is to expand your footprint by talking about liberty and talking about economic uplift, talking about the fundamental principles that animate you, and not just about one person who is going to be – look, why did UKIP fail? Nigel Farage. He was is a horrible, terrible front man for a political movement. So, you know, they may have had ideas that ended up infecting the whole country with Brexit, but it never took off in part because Farage was just a horrible front man. And you know, Trump is a great showman. He's a great television performer. So that has helped him maintain his hold on the cult.
I think it's interesting because with Nigel Farage, as you say, he was a terrible frontman, which is part of the reason because the Vote Leave campaign, the official Vote Leave campaign in 2016, actually refused to be associated with Farage. He was not a part of that campaign because they said that every time UKIP's numbers go up, the numbers who want to leave the EU goes down.
Correct. So having an idea motivating a party is better than having an individual motivating a party.
Yeah. And seems like the GOP lost most of its ideas some time ago, unfortunately.
Very much so.
I actually read, it was an interesting article, and I'm struggling to remember who wrote it, but it was basically the idea that American conservatism in its modern form was really free movements. You had the traditionalists, you had the neocons, and you had libertarians. And really, those don't necessarily go together. You know, you had the 1980s was the only time when they all got what they wanted. Russia was pushed back. There was deregulation, and of course there was the AIDS panic, which led to a backlash against the LGBT. But since then, it's been a more and more frail movement. What do you think of that explanation?
Well, the three-legged stool of the GOP, which was always foreign policy conservatives, fiscal conservatives, and individual liberty, and social conservatives, you know, it has fallen apart. The social conservatives have made a compromise with Trump. They think that they'll get judges that they want to rule in a way that they desire, and that's enough for them. Even though he is anathema to all their supposed religious values, the foreign policy conservatives are in a complete state of freak out. They know how dangerous Trump is. They're a lot of them voting for Biden this year, including very prominent former generals and admirals and foreign policy leaders around the country. And the fiscal conservatives no longer matter. Donald Trump is engaged on the biggest spending spree in American history. Our debts and deficits are at levels that are incomprehensible at this point, and that have no economic exit plan to get out from underneath the current deficits or debt, to say nothing of the debt. So that three-legged stool has been replaced by a one-legged stool, and it's, do you love Donald Trump?
Yeah. That's somber but accurate, I'm afraid. So going back to, I asked you about 2024. It's perfectly possible, even if Trump is gone, and let's hope he's gone, but even if he's gone, you know, the GOP brand could still, well, it could still take some time to rehabilitate, to put it nicely. But what...
That's true, and there's a question as to whether or not the Republican brand has been so poisoned that you can't return to it, and you have to name it something else or do something else because nothing in Trumpism will survive the passing of Trump. The whole nationalist populism, the whole authoritarian statism, all those things, that's going to add up to something that is less amenable to a national party that's viable at every level.
Yeah, I mean, the demographics show it's a shrinking coalition, at least in the long term. So what I was getting at is, you know, so what kind of, you know, suppose there is a chance, and yes, I realize that maybe the GOP will just have to rename the entire party or whatever, but suppose there is a chance, what kind of candidate should the GOP be looking for? I'm not looking for a name, I'm not looking for you to make an endorsement, I understand it's a bit early for that, but like, just in terms of characteristics, what would you be...
Yeah, look, I think you need someone who's going to recapture optimism, because Trumpism is a fundamentally pessimistic philosophy. It's a philosophy of decline and doubt and fear and isolation. I think you need someone who's going to be dedicated to eliminating the crony capitalism that's definitionally part of Trumpism. You know, we need free markets are one thing, but free markets, because they're being aligned that way, because you give a donation to the Republican committee or you give a donation to Trump or his inaugural, that's a stunningly different approach to governance that is not conservative. I also think you need somebody who's going to be able to show decency and compassion again, because Trump is a fundamentally indecent and incompassionate human. He does not care about people, as is witnessed by his behavior. He does not does not have any sort of connection with the lives of everyday people. So I think you need somebody in that sort of broad vein. Also, someone who doesn't take themselves too seriously, because, you know, we're going to enter an era of millennial politics where irony is a definitional characteristic of life.
Yeah. One thing that sort of surprised me a little about 2016 is that the very idea of being, of having experience, of being an insider, was viewed as so negatively. Whereas, I mean, it would have been nice if at some point during the GOP debate, someone would have said, yes, I'm experienced, and you know how I got experienced? I got things done. So people kept sending me back to DC. That's, you know, like, don't try and pretend you're an outsider when you're definitely not an outsider. You say, yeah, I'm an insider. That's my selling point. You know,
like, right. I think we may be entering an era where expertise is valued again. Mm. Because there was a lot of Trumpism that was about, we don't like the scientists, we don't like the experts, we don't like those smart people. They're trying to tell us what to do, and so on and so on.
Yeah. So, and I would also say, because this is something that I've been thinking about, thinking about myself, that just having a candidate, because it is possible that the next candidate will be essentially a Goldwater kind of candidate that doesn't win or maybe even come close to winning, but could set, you know, set the direction, set a footprint basically for going forward. So having a having a candidate say, you know, literally, like, and I realize this is never going to happen literally, but, you know, it would just be fun as a thought experiment. Just run run an ad saying that, you know, here are my thoughts on the taxation system, here are the pros of my plan, sure. Here are some of the you know, reasonable objections, you know, like, literally be open about it. Because one thing that I think has led a lot to Trumpism, and this is especially the case with international trade, is the idea we are told everybody's going to be a winner. You know, we're told, and I mean, I'm just finishing up a PhD in economics. I know the benefits of international trade. But I also know that it's not literally true that everybody is a winner. If you lose your job if you lose your job in a factory, chances are even if you get slightly cheaper consumer goods, if you lose three years of work life income while you're looking for another job, you're going to be financially worse off on the whole. And I feel like if even if it had been a tougher conversation to have in the 80s or 90s, if we'd had that conversation and talked about these are going to be the benefits, these are going to be the drawbacks, everybody should be clear about this, you know.
And I think that happens in a lot of different ideological areas where people dig in and say, okay, we have to reduce carbon, you all agree, but nothing can go wrong, there won't be any downside to it.
Yeah.
You know, and when there's a downside, people go, wait, what about this or that? And that's the same thing you see, I think, with a lot of arguments about trade and about you know, the role of an evolving workforce in the political changes that are going on in the world right now.
So I wanted to ask one final question, and this has been maybe the black box, so to speak, of this election, which is whether it's going to be a fair election. And do you think, or how likely do you think it is that this election is going to end up in the Supreme Court?
Extremely.
Even if it's not close?
Well, that's our goal, is to make it not close. I want it to be so big it doesn't matter if the other side cheats. I want to hammer them so hard that they walk away the next day not wanting to keep fighting. And because of that stated desire by this president to take the election to court or take it to the streets if he doesn't win the Electoral College vote right away, and to deny that there's a process here, I think there's a very high likelihood it ends up in court. I think it's going to be a very difficult time. I think the period between November 4th and January 20th is going to be a very long stretch.
So do you do you think, because people are talking about, you know, the Florida 2000 election as yes. a bit of a hallmark here, but this could take place over several states. This isn't just, you know, hanging chats, which was, you know, legitimate arguments on both sides, you know, to be fair.
No, this is going to be, they're going to try to litigate down to the fundamentals of allowing the vote. And that, I think, is a very dangerous precedent, a very dangerous place to go, which, again, is why the Lincoln Project is fighting so hard to defeat Trump in a spectacular and sweeping fashion.
And I certainly hope you do so. So final question about that. Do you think there is, and I know this question has been asked for 3.5 years and the answer has always been no. If Trump were to try, if we suppose Trump is clearly the loser on election night, but he still wants to litigate his case.
Right.
Do you think there's any chance that the Republican Party says, nope, that's enough, we lost the election, we're moving on?
No, they will never abandon him until he's dead. And even then, probably not.
Well, that's a pessimistic view, but...
I'm a cynical guy.
Well, I mean, I've been watching your country from afar for many, many years, and, well, I can see why.
Well, I very much appreciate you having me on the podcast, yes. and I wish you all the best.
Yes, you too. I wish you all the best, and best of luck with this shit show.
Thanks again. Okay. Have a great day.
Okay, have a great day. Bye.
Ja, John, det där var alltså din intervju med Rick Wilson från The Lincoln Project. Och ja, det här är intressant därför att du, John, är ju faktiskt en del på ett sätt av Never Trump-rörelsen. Du är inte aktiv direkt i Lincoln Project, men det finns ju en bredare del av det här. Och du skriver för en del sajter som är republikanska Never Trump-sajter. Kan du berätta lite om det? Och hur du kom in i det också?
Ja, så på sistone så har jag börjat skriva för The Bulwark som är... den största Never Trump-sajten har miljontals läsare och har också en ganska bred läsarkrets, består delvis av republikaner som inte gillar Trump såklart, men även en del som är, jag menar, mittenväljare, oberoende väljare, högerlutande demokrater och så vidare. Det finns en ganska bred läsarkrets och den sajten grundades av Bill Kristol som också är en politisk veteran och det brukar man kalla neokonservatismens gudfader inne i USA. Så hur jag kom in i det här, alltså Never Trump, det tror jag alla vet. Det kan du kolla poddarkivet. Vi hade faktiskt en del intressanta poddar som jag har lyssnat igen från 2015 när Trump tog upp på den politiska scenen, där vi du och jag alltså, Ronny, båda resonerade kring huruvida man kunde stödja Trump om han nu skulle bli republikanernas nominerade, om han skulle bli republikansk kandidat. Och jag har haft samma position hela tiden. Och det är att jag sa att vi hade en podd i december 2015 som, om jag minns rätt, faktiskt hette "Kan man stödja Trump?" Och min linje då och nu, det var om Trump skulle göra en pivot, alltså visa sig vara mer presidentlik, visa att han hade, ja men alltså helt enkelt villig att vara mer statsmannässig, eller om Trump skulle om alternativet var Trump eller Sanders, skulle jag välja Trump. Det var min position då och det är min position nu. Hade Sanders vunnit det demokratiska primärvalet så hade jag stött Sanders. Eller förlåt, så hade jag stött Trump. Det är liksom, det är USA får inte falla in i socialism.
Det var en farlig felsägning, men ja.
Grejen är det att, jag menar, i valet mellan Trump och socialism så är valet Trump. I valet mellan Trump och mellanmjölks vänsterliberalism så är, ja, motvilligt valet det sistnämnda. Så det har varit min position i 5 års tid. Så det var du som ändrade hållning för övrigt.
Ja, det vet jag inte, men det är en annan diskussion. Min fråga nu är, hur kom du in i den här Trump-rörelsen i USA? För det är där du har fått väldigt många kontakter nu.
Ja, alltså jag har väl haft det som ett mål ett tag att jag skulle försöka få in en fot där. Jag skickade jag skickat lite artiklar så där. Det har inte liksom det är ganska det är ganska competitive om man säger så. Så det var, jag fick någon artikel från början som hade med Sveriges coronastrategi att göra. För vi skulle säga att de här sajterna publicerar inte bara om Donald Trump, utan det är ju som political commentary. Så det var no dice just då. Men sen nämns bara att jag fick lite mofo en artikel jag hade skrivit om varför jag som konservativ som utländsk konservativ brydde mig om att Trump inte skulle bli omvald. Och då berättade jag också historien om när jag skrev en artikelserie för Avpixlat för 4 år sedan om varför jag inte tyckte att konservativa borde stödja Trump. Och det blev ett jäkla liv. Nämligen så jag ville påvisa helt enkelt att jag menar, den osunda personkulten kring Donald Trump finns på båda sidor av Atlanten, och det är kort sagt ett internationellt hot. Och därför så är liksom USA valt där av intresse, även om man är även om man inte bor i USA.
Mm. Vi kan
så, och sen jag har fått väldigt bra kontakt där med en av deras en av deras redaktörer, en av deras editors. Så vi har en väldigt bra så jag menar, jag kan avslöja, vi kommer ut med en till artikel troligtvis nu till veckan. Det har blivit riktigt kaos i USAs politik, men jag skulle tro att det blir nu slutet av nästa vecka. Handlar inte om Trump eller något sånt, men det publiceras också på The Bulwark. Så att jag är väldigt glad att jag har kommit in i den här rörelsen, och det. Och jag menar, sen också det här, jag tror, och det här inställningen är du väldigt medveten om, Ron, att jag tror att trumpismen som ideologi är inte hållbar. Och det innebär att man kan väl säga att det, jag menar, jo, på kort sikt så är det klart att du har större läsarkrets om du skriver för Breitbart eller liksom någon av Spectator eller liksom någon av de här Trump-vänliga sajterna. Men på längre sikt, jag menar, Trumpiströrelsen kommer inte kunna behålla kontrollen över det republikanska partiet. Och jag tror att Lincoln Project är en stor del av det här. För att Lincoln Project, som jag ser det, det kan man säga att den intellektuella sidan av republikanerna slår tillbaka väldigt hårt och slår tillbaka skoningslöst. Syftet med Lincoln Project är inte bara att, jag menar, få Trump att inte bli omvald. Det är också att visa alla som funderar på att ställa upp på en Trump-vänlig plattform 2024, att det är det här ni kommer att mötas med. Liksom, det kommer inte vara, liksom, ett problem 2016, det var att det var ingen som ville riktigt utmana Trump. Det var ingen som riktigt ville det, utan alla var liksom, man väntade på att någon annan skulle attackera honom. Utan nu är det så att om du ställer upp på en Trump, liksom på en Trump-valplattform 2024, Då kommer vi krossa dig direkt. Vi kommer göra det skoningslöst och vi kommer ta till alla angrepp som behövs för det, även om det innebär att funka till din nivå.
Ja, okej. Men det är intressant här då, för det är därför jag ville ha med den här intervjun och sådär. Jag tycker det är ganska kul att du kom in i den här delen av det republikanska partiet, och orsaken till att jag tycker det är att vi har ju en annan debatt här i Sverige då, som handlar om USA-situationen där. Och Fredrik Reinfeldt, vår tidigare statsminister, han har skrivit en bok om USA, och han pratade på SVT för en månad sedan, och då nämnde han Lincoln Project, och han sa så här, vi kan spela klippet.
Det jag menar är att han i en mening kan sägas ha kidnappat det republikanska partiet, som är förvånansvärt tyst, åtminstone de som sitter i aktiva roller. Vi har ju sett hur tidigare republikaner, det finns ett så kallat Lincoln Project, där gamla republikaner som inte vill se honom omvald aktiverar sig. Tidigare Bush-familjen, alltså tidigare presidenterna, har markerat distans. En del av de som har lämnat markerar att de inte tänker rösta på Donald Trump. Men det är förvånansvärt tyst från de republikaner som sitter i olika positioner.
Där har vi Fredrik Reinfeldt, och vad han sa alltså, det var ju att han ville då betona att det finns republikaner som är emot mot Donald Trump då, för han är också emot Donald Trump, även om han är både från ett Never Trump-perspektiv och från ett demokratiskt perspektiv. Men han nämnde i alla fall Lincoln Project, och det jag vill få fram här är att man behöver inte åka till USA, för Reinfeldt känner inte de här människorna, utan de finns här i Sverige. Jag menar, du har kontakt med den här rörelsen, jag har kontakt med en annan del av den republikanska rörelsen, men amerikanska nyhetsanalyser har kommit ganska långt. Det är det jag vill få fram här då, med liksom våra kontakter och sådana saker, och det om något kan ju vara värt att uppmärksamma också, så att man inte bara lyssnar på de här som Fredrik Reinfeldt som kastar ut ett stort nät och på något sätt försöker visa sig kunniga, medan den här riktiga spjutspetskompetensen, det finns mycket närmare.
Jag är helt övertygad om att Fredrik Reinfeldt inte känner någon i The Link, i The Lincoln Project eller The Bulwark eller någonting annat. Det känns som att jag har lärt känna de här människorna ganska väl, och jag kan säga att hade någon av dem känt Sveriges statsminister hade de sagt det. Så det här med alltså det, alltså Lincoln Project, man får tycka vad man vill, men de har blivit en YouTube-succé. De har även fått in mycket mer pengar än de trodde de satsade, som Rick Wilson sa i den här intervjun då, att de satsade på $5 million, de har fått in 70 miljoner. De har blivit liksom en viral succé just på grund av att man kan säga att, jag menar, man får ändå säga, de funkar lite till Trumps nivå, men de gör det på ett sånt sofistikerat ändå sätt, och de, jag menar, bland de miljontals väljare som är riktigt förbannade på Trump, så är det kul att se någon som verkligen, alltså verkligen gör ads som bara är designade för att gå Trump under finnet och få Trump att göra misstag, alltså det som jag kallar psykologisk fixföring.
Ja, men jätteintressant. Vi får spela fler intervjuer med dem här, för att jag håller inte med om, men jag tycker att det är intressant att du har kommit så nära den här rörelsen. Så tack John, vi ser fram emot framtida liknande intervjuer.
Tack själv.
Det var avsnitt 1198 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser, Sveriges enda konservativa USA-podd som finns för att ge det perspektiv på USA som svensk media inte ger. Stöd gärna på swishnummer 070 30 28 95 0 eller genom att via hemsidan stödja på PayPal, Patreon eller bankkonto. Det var allt för idag. Tack för att ni har lyssnat.